is an Amazon best-selling author, motivational speaker, a childhood trauma survivor, and oh my gosh, she's had a journey. But welcome to the show, Lolita.
Thank you so much for having me.
I am super excited to get to meet you. We got a chance to chat a little bit before I hit that record button. And just your sense of humor just sparkles and shines. And I love you for that. It's just amazing. So where are you originally from? Where'd you grow up?
I grew up in Lithuania and now I live in Houston, Texas. You those who don't know what Houston is, and I, you know, not everybody knows all around the world. And I came here in US 23 years ago. So yeah, I still don't have my Texas accent, but I still probably have my Lithuanian one.
A little bit of Lithuania. Yeah, I could hear that. Yeah, I've known a couple of people from Lithuania, especially when I lived in Los Angeles. I absolutely love the culture and the food, by the way, just amazing. What's your favorite dish?
Cepelinai.
It's basically
a meatball surrounded by potatoes. I mean, what's wrong with meat and potatoes? It's always good.
Absolutely. I agree. So you had to overcome a lot of stuff. You had kind of a rough childhood. You had a rough household growing up. Can you kind of take us through what it is that you had to get through and where you are now?
So first, I'm only one child. So yes, I'm the best and the worst by default, depending on the day. But I think when I was growing up, since I didn't have siblings and someone so close to me every single day with me, I was thinking that I'm growing up in a totally normal environment. You know, when you're growing up somewhere and that's all you know, that's for you, it's normal. So when I was comparing myself to neighbors, there are a lot of them lived the same similar lives like mine, but many of them didn't. For example, my dad was an alcoholic. And you know that uncertainty and that constant stress, because I will be afraid to go home after school because I have no idea how drunk my dad would be. And you know those calls of like somebody ringing a doorbell and they're like, hey, can you come and pick up dad from downstairs? You know, we have to climb over him to get home. And you know, I was living in high rise. And that was super embarrassing, but also super scary because I never knew how drunk he will get. He will get violent. I mean, he never touched me and my mother, but he threw a lot of things and lots of dishes. You know, that environment I grew up was constantly stressed and super vigilant. And I thought that was my normal environment. And then when I came here to US for my American dream, I was workaholic. I'm like, okay, I'm just gonna do this. This is the land of the dreams, and I'm going to make this. I was working overtime, weekends. I really didn't follow any nutritional diet because whatever's in the break room, that's the lunch today. And the only exercise I used to do just to use the ladies' room. That's how I say that was my biggest exercise for the day. And basically, what happened? I just, you know, I was in my mid 30s, and I just burn out. And I was people pleasing, constantly telling yes to everybody, didn't know how to manage my stress, was workaholic. And all of this is really coming from childhood trauma. Mm-hmm. So when it really finally got to my body of saying, I cannot do this anymore, and really impacted my body that I had to go to emergency room, then I realized, you know what? I think I need to start taking care of myself. So that's how I became a stress management coach.
Wow. And there's so much of that that is absolutely tied to childhood trauma and stuff. You know, the workaholic part, especially, a lot of people don't realize that. Yeah. You know, when did you come to that realization?
So when I started managing my stress and my time management and all of this, like the staples of stress management, like, oh, you know, you do yoga, you do meditation, you do your, you know, you write your diaries and you eat nutritious food. That was a great start for me, and it helped me a lot to become more stable. But then I realized one thing, that I will be in the same room with somebody and something happens. They react to this situation very differently than I. So then when I was reading a book, How to Make Business, you know, for coaches, the author mentioned the book about adult children of alcoholics. And I had no idea that thing exists. I was like, what? My dad's alcoholic too. And, you know, I was reading the whole book and I was like, oh my gosh, that's like me. It's me. So then finally the last piece fell. I was like, oh, because that's how I live. I always look through the lens of being super vigilant, in always waiting for the second shoe to drop. And if this is, looks good, somebody's nice to me, I'm always asking myself, why are they nice to me? Oh, something's coming. And a lot of that behavior was really based on that childhood trauma, because to me that was normal. So I'm projecting everything in my adult life as well. And then when I start implementing and healing that childhood trauma, and then the life started changing, and then I became less stressed and less burnout. So that's how it all started.
Right. And I know this one's probably going to be kind of tough, but how is your relationship with your father now? Did he get help? Did you guys have a good relationship at any point?
So when I was reading the book about adult children of alcoholics or addicts or anyone really who grew up in a dysfunctional family or somebody who didn't get their needs met when they were children, it said that there is this very difficult relationship that when you start realizing that, oh, all this trauma happened because of this, then I became very angry. I became very angry at him, and I was like, how can you do this to me? I'm only one child. And then, of course, in a way, I felt guilty of feeling anger towards my dad. But then, when I realized, I'm like, no, I have to stand by myself, by next to myself, I would say, and support myself, and not to abandon my own needs of feeling resentful and angry that moment if that was really what I feel. So when I start really working on my emotions, and I agree to myself, like, you know what, I'm just gonna feel whatever I'm feeling, and if I don't want to talk to my dad, that's okay. And when you grew up in this kind of family, I remember very well, you do not tell anyone that this is happening. Although the whole freaking neighborhood knew that, my dad was drunk that day. But you act like nothing happens. Everything is great. We're in good family, we're in a great relationship. This is all sparkly and we're all good to go. And so all of this continued into a very, very long time, of course, that I was even afraid to ask for help for anyone or even talk about that or even acknowledge to myself, let alone. But then, when I started working on this process, I realized that I also need to look at my dad as a someone who's also wounded with his own childhood traumas, and I believe only hurt people hurt others. I don't think there's a parent who wakes up in the morning and says, "You know what? You know it's gonna be fun today. I'm gonna hit my child today, or I'm gonna get drunk and then ruin everybody else's lives around me." Nobody does that. It comes from that's the way they soothe their own wounds. That's the way they run away from their own pain. So when I start looking at my dad as someone who also grew up in the childhood with the childhood trauma, and my grandparents were not alcoholics, but they were workaholics, and they just didn't pay attention to him. But he grew up with this never enough feeling. So then he was drinking to cover his pain. And so when I started looking at him as this 3 years old toddler that's having a tantrum and doesn't know how to manage his emotions, he's coming with his own pain. That's the one I finally released that guilt and anger and resentment towards my dad. And I was like, this is just another human that's going through childhood trauma. And I started feeling, love and just hoping that one day he will arrive at the place in my much better place. He stopped drinking after my parents came here to US, and that was a very big change. And he's in a much better place. We are much more happier as a family. But it took a huge process to realize that, he's the same someone who come from childhood trauma and his own pain. And he's just trying his best, like all of us are.
Wow, that's amazing. And he and your mother are still together?
Yes, and it works very well for them because it's a very codependent relationship. And hey, if that works for them, it works for me.
As long as they're happy.
That's all I care.
You know? Man, how many years have they been married?
48.
Oh my goodness.
Apparently,
Well,
it works.
oh my gosh. Well, happy anniversary to them. Man, that is a lot of years to be together. Wow. And how about you? Have you found that what you went through in your own healing has helped you or hindered you in relationships in your life?
Yes. So before I started on this deep healing of childhood trauma, I was married and I was married to a narcissist because that's what I knew. And I think narcissism and addiction is very similar way, the way the children growing up in that environment receives the attention and love, or I should say the lack of it. And so for me, it was like, okay, I'm going to marry somebody else who's so self-centered. They don't care about me. They don't care about my needs. They, if I start complaining about something, they just tell me stop whining and, gaslight me and all of that jazz. And then when I physically collapsed, and then I started paying attention to my stress, and then when I realized that a lot of my stress, I really, I'm the one who creates. I'm too hypervigilant, and many things I do not handle well. When I started working on that, and I started working on my childhood trauma, I realized what the relationship was in, and that obviously couldn't stay the same. I think change happens in two ways: or you're super inspired, or you're super in pain, and that was super in pain. And I realized I cannot live in such an unhappy marriage because me as a person changed. And even though I was very happy in the codependent relationship at the beginning of a marriage, as when I the time was going and I was changing, and I realized I think I learned my lesson. I now know who I am, what I want, what I don't want, and that served me well. And it's time to move on. So, yeah, we ended the marriage for a 13 years marriage, and I am very happy I did that.
Wow. You're not the same person you were.
No, I wasn't. So, and that was great experience.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm divorced myself, but very, very happily married, as of next Friday for 2 years.
Oh my gosh, well, congratulations.
Thank
Yay.
you.
That's
So,
good to
yeah,
hear.
when you go through this journey of healing, you become somebody else entirely. And there is this grieving process. Because you have to grieve for the person that you were and the person that you were supposed to become back then, because now that person will no longer exist. You are somebody else entirely, and it's time to embrace that. And I think that's such a beautiful thing in our journey.
And it takes a lot of courage. A lot of, I'm a stress management coach, so I have lots of people who come with a simple thing of, oh, I'm burnt out, I'm stressed out. But actually, deep down, it comes from their childhood trauma and from their needs not being met. And that's, it takes a lot of courage, because if you grew up in an environment that we've already been told that you're supposed to respect, and you cannot go against the authority, the God, the government, and the family and the parents. You should not, you just should bow and do whatever they tell you to. That takes courage, really, to say, you know what, I am a different person, and it's okay if I disagree with something. That takes courage.
Yeah. What does your work as a stress management coach look like? I mean, is this like an every single day thing? How many people do you work with? What's like some of the major issues that you guys tackle?
So if someone will go and just Google my name, Loretta Gurin, on just Google, it looks like I'm all over the place, because I do a lot of things. I love helping my clients. And somebody would be coming to me and say, you know what, I'm a single mother with two kids, and I'm running my own business. I'm so stressed out, burnt out, I don't know. Tell me what I need to do. And then we say, okay, well, you're workaholic, so let's just work. Why is that serving you? And that's the anyone who's listening right now, and they think, yeah, I'm just not happy in my relationship, or I'm not happy with my money or whatever. Ask yourself one question: how is this serving you? And I know, it's like, what do you mean it's serving me? But it does. We always work in our comfort zone. So when you discover how is that serving you, that's you can move on. So I have lots of clients that come and go, and I also have, it's really not like only one time I work with that many clients. I'll do one-on-one. I also have an online membership. And of course, we'll give you all the links below, that you can have all the what I teach. And I tackle every month different things, like fear of abandonment, or a fear of intimacy, or of some other things that really, you grow up in that environment, so you're handling very differently than everybody else. And that helps with different exercises that you can implement without me doing one-on-one coaching. And that's more affordable, of course. Then I do teach other classes online that are like donation based on different platforms. I'm also participating in plenty of podcasts just to spread the word and say it's okay, you can make through this. I also do speaking engagements. I work on for lunch and learns for the companies that I help them to manage the stress stress in the workplace environment. So yeah, I do like so much of stuff that's, sometimes I'm wondering, how am I even managing all this? but I love doing that. And that is the most important thing, because no matter what you do, if you don't like it, then you're really stressed out and you can get sick.
That's what you were talking about. It's serving you. It is fulfilling you. It is filling your heart. This is so cool. So you're helping other people to heal, but what helped you to heal?
The number one thing I always say, it's okay to be you and you are enough. It's okay. And one thing what really was very disappointing, I would say, when I started reading that book about adult children of alcoholics, and I realized that, oh, I was one of those children that grew up with that. First, it came this disappointment and kind of grief of thinking, oh my gosh, I'm damaged now. This is it, you know, my life is not never going to be the same, and I will never achieve the heights that I want. But that is not true. Just because we went through something, that actually makes us more special, I think. And first of all, nobody's more special. Okay, we all are special. We all are unique, and that's the beauty of it. Just because somebody is different than you doesn't mean it's wrong. It's just different, and that's the beauty of life. So, like in my book, and I'll be very happy to read just like a little one page from Stress Management for Adult Children of Alcoholics. And now those who are listening and you're like, I don't have a parent alcoholic, it's okay, because I really address the same issues that anyone from coming from a dysfunctional family can see in the adult life. And every chapter has exercises that you specifically can do that can help you with that. And also every chapter, at the end of a chapter, I write, how is this serving you, but how is that makes you a superpower? For example, you have no patience. What is the superpower about that, right? Because people say, no, you immediate gratification is such a bad thing. Well, guess what? If you have no patience, you're gonna make things faster. Somebody tells you to do something and you're gonna do it. You want to do something and you're like, you take care of this right away. You're not gonna ponder there for hours or months until you're finally ready for that. Of course, it's not always being on the impulse, it's a good idea. But I think I always accomplish more than other peeps that I hang out with because I have no patience. And that's really coming from my childhood trauma, because I learned it, that if my daddy today is sober and he says, let's go ride a bicycle, I better do it today because tomorrow is never going to arrive. Tomorrow, he might be already drunk and then there will be no bike. So when I have an opportunity to do something, I grab onto that. So I always say, you always need to see how unique and special you are. Just because you came from somewhere, actually, that's good. Whatever things that happen to you is an experience. There's no good or bad experience. It just is. Life is, that's what it is. And when you start looking at it from a point of, this is a great experience. Now I know what I don't want, and now I know what I want, then it becomes easier. But you have to give yourself permission to give yourself feel what you feel, because when you grow up in a dysfunctional family, you might be told not to feel what you feel, and you are forbidden to be for who you are. So it takes time and courage to actually discover yourself. But just being in the place and allowing yourself and your feelings just to be with yourself, that's where it all starts.
I love what you're doing. Yes, and speaking of the book, hold that up for me again. Is this based on Greek mythology? Is that Sisyphus pushing a boulder up the mountain?
No, but it totally felt like that, right? Because when we come from a childhood trauma or anything, it feels like, oh my gosh, this battle of like how come everybody needs to go in a path that just looks nice, and we always have to like climb the mountain and make it so difficult. But you know, there is always the light of the end of a tunnel, right? That's why I like this little sun coming through. Oh, and for those who are listening in, if you're still with us, we'll be posting a link how you can get this best-selling book for free as a PDF, as an ebook. You of course can go and buy it on Amazon if you find anyone in your environment can benefit from that book, or give them a, I don't know, a birthday gift, you know, for those people who have everything. I think self-development books are always a good gift. And so I think totally we should all read that and implement even one little exercise a day.
Fantastic. And you have a little part already picked out to read for us. Would you mind sharing that with us?
Yes, and it's even less than a page because I know we don't really have that much time. So it is coming from the chapter two that's called Being Pessimistic. And it pretty much says about the survival, that this is survival instinct is expecting the worst. I remember being 7 years old, looking through the window of our tiny apartment. waiting for my mom to come back home, my heart pounding in my chest. Usually she would be back by 6, but sometimes she would be late. I could not stop staring at the corner of the house where she would walk up at any moment and imagining the worst, that she had died and would never come back. Pair that with fear of abandonment and you have a terrified kid. Sure, many kids are afraid of their parents leaving them, but for adult children alcoholic, that was especially hard. I realized later in my life that I would assume the worst in many situations, with little or no evidence, no matter how old I got. On the surface, it looks like ACOAs just prepare themselves for the worst to save themselves from disappointments. And don't get me wrong, I think it is essential to prepare yourself for the worst. As a matter of fact, I recommend doing an exercise where you look at something that is bothering you right now and prepare for the worst case scenario. Usually, nobody likes to plan or even look forward towards something uncomfortable or even painful. But preparing mentally and even taking physical action to prepare for something unseen in the future helps to lower your stress. Moreover, by preparing yourself for the worst case scenario, you feel in control of the situation. Hence, you calm down.
Wow. So I can identify with this. I just told you that my husband and I are coming up on our 2-year wedding anniversary. I'm super excited about it. But if there's ever a day that he's late coming home, I go into a miniature panic attack. And I try to calm myself down. I tell myself, no, he's fine. He's perfectly fine. He probably stopped off at the store to grab a new album or a new book or something like that because we're big geeks. But if the time passes and it's been 15 minutes, 20 minutes, 30 minutes, then I really start panicking. Oh my gosh, this man is the greatest man I've ever known in my entire life. And if anything happens to him, my life will never be the same. And it's not just because he is the breadwinner of the family, although he is, but it's because I can't imagine my life without him. And I panic because I've never had that in my life. So when you're sitting in this place of this overwhelming fear that the person that you love is never coming home, what do you do? I mean, the only thing that I've been able to do is explain to my husband, this is how I feel, and please send me a text message if you're going to be late. And he's gotten really good at that. For other people, how do you deal with this?
So I can see one thing that helped me a lot. We have to work with our brain. So you can start writing a list, like a little diary, or even like on the phone or somewhere that you can access. So then you write the day, what happened, and you're like, you were stressed out, it's not going to come back home, whatever. And then when he comes back home, you write the time when he did, and you write that he actually came back home. So then you accumulate all of those facts. So then when you get into anxiety attack, you remind your brain that, hey, this has happened before, but guess what? It actually came out fine. I was safe. Nothing bad happened. So and more while you start, you will override this. You tell your brain to calm down. And that helped me a lot to reassure that everything is okay. And then it helps to go away over time. But of course, it never will. And kudos to your husband that he's so good of telling you all those things. He's not getting angry at you because that, for situations like that, it definitely takes two to tango.
I brag about him all the time. Every time I get up on stage, I talk about how he's the most amazing, loving, patient, kind, wonderful man that I've ever known. There was one day we were on our way home. Sorry, I'm tearing up here. There was
Aww.
one day that we were on our way home from a speaking invite that I did. And my husband told me, he says, I've got to tell you the truth about something. I said, uh-oh. He says, in all my life, in all the people that I've known, in all the places that I've lived, you were the only person that has ever accused me of being patient. And I love him so much for that.
Oh,
It will crack
that's
me
so
up for the rest
wonderful.
of my life. But yeah.
I am so happy for that you found the person. I think it's very inspirational for everybody else who's listening right now and think, oh, I will never find anyone. So you're a testament to that.
I didn't think I would either. I was 41 years old when I met him, but I had to go through that whole healing journey before I ever got close, before I was really ready.
And you also, you can appreciate that connection right now so much more because you didn't have that before.
Yeah, absolutely. Every time I ever thought I had it, it was some kind of abusive relationship that I was drawn to because it was what was familiar. Yeah. Well, it has come to that point in the episode where I have to ask you my very last question. And I hate that because I've had so much fun chatting with you, learning about you. But it's always my favorite question because it can change any given day depending on what it is that you're feeling or what you're going through. But what is one thing that you truly love about yourself that's not related to your physical appearance?
Tenacity. I can just go through anything. And don't get me wrong, it's not like I'm this energizer bunny who just runs all the time forward. No, I will have days that I'm like, go, 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 go. And the next day is like, oh, it didn't happen. And I just go this dip. But guess what? After that dip, I'm always pick up. And I think as long as they get what they want to go, you know, all those dips really doesn't matter. But a lot of things I went through that I thought I will never go through, but I did. So, yeah, next time when I always get in that dip, I'm like, you know what? I'll make it to the next day and I'm sure I'll get where I want to go.
If you've enjoyed tonight's episode, please make sure you check out the episode description. You'll find links there on how you can learn more about this guest, links to connect with them on social media, and how to support the podcast. Remember, I don't get paid to do this. My boss is a bit tight-fisted, but I can say that. I work for myself.